Morning. Welcome to Orlando. My name's Garth Fort, and I'm honored to have the next hour to spend with you talking about how we can help you enable the consumerization of IT. Now, this is it's a broad term. It's often overused in the industry between consumerization of IT and cloud, perhaps the most overused technology terms of our generation. But this is, again, my third opportunity to come and speak to the Tech Ed audience. And I thought as I was preparing this, it would be fun to go back and look at a couple of our predictions from years past and see how that has played out. So in 2010, I got up and we talked about IT infrastructure, and we talked about 2 billion people having access to mobile devices at this point in time. And in 2010, we were amazed to see 19 million tablets shipping into the market. We had just released a beta of a product called Windows Intune for configuration management, PC management, and security offered as a service in the cloud. We were in beta for System Center Config Man 2007 R3, and we had a forefront endpoint protection product that was on the way. This time last year, consumerization really had come to a head, and it became a very dominant conversation that we had with all of you while we were here at TechEd. We hadn't been standing still, and from a product perspective, System Center 2012, Beta 2 released. Endpoint Protection was also in beta for a 2012 release, really integrated with that core ConfigMan infrastructure. And finally, Windows Intune was available commercially as a service for the first time. And then looking back over what's happened in the last year, it actually has been an amazing 12-month period. In 2011, we recently looked at some analyst research that said that in developed markets, power users have anywhere between 5 and 7 internet-connected devices. Some of these are provided by their employers. Many of them are owned and purchased by themselves. It's also interesting that 13% of information workers say they use their personal tablet to get their work done, but only about half that many IT professionals acknowledge the fact that people use their personal devices to get work done. And so there's a little bit of a gap there. And then finally, it's amazing to look at what's happened from a device diversity perspective. 145 million smartphones shipped in the first quarter of 2012 alone. 69 million media tablets shipped. You know, contrast that to the 19 million tablets that we saw in 2010. Nearly 350 million PCs and over 600 million licenses of Windows sold and deployed, or not quite deployed. Many of you are telling us that you are beginning in earnest your rollout of Windows 7, and Windows 7 is now past XP as the majority of the Windows installed base. From a product perspective, it's been a busy couple of years for us as well. System Center 2012 shipped, SQL Server 2012 shipped, and you saw in Satya's keynote a lot of the great technology that's coming, both with Windows Server 2012 and the spring release of Windows Azure. We're also on our third release of Windows Intune, which goes into general availability this week. And we've released a technical preview of Office 15, in addition to the release preview of the versions of Windows, both for client and server. So certainly an exciting time for Microsoft. A lot of our hard work over the last 3 years will be coming to market in the next 12 months, and we're excited to share that with you. Now, in terms of embracing consumerization of IT, you know, now, I think that the idea that end users are going to drive the future of endpoint computing, that's a very natural one for Microsoft. When you think about how we got started, we didn't get started by selling IT to corporate IT. We got started selling basic compilers to people who built their own PCs as hobbyists. We really got started, you know, thinking about the influential end user and making sure that the people that loved the technology had the products that they could bring in and get their work done. And embracing this notion of empowering end users is really a core part of our DNA. But at the same time, it does create challenges. When end users kind of have complete control over what they want to do their computing on, it does create challenges for IT in terms of security, management, and governance. On the plane, as I was coming into Orlando last night, I sat next to a gentleman who works for, he's a lawyer, he works for the Department of Justice, and it was very interesting looking at kind of his kit. As he pulled out his briefcase from under the seat, he had his iPod that he watched, or his iPad that he was watching movies on. He had his personal phone that he was using. He had his BlackBerry and his laptop that were issued by sort of the government offices. And he was juggling 4 different devices through the duration of this 4-hour flight. to do some personal work and some personal email and watch a few movies and keep himself entertained. But it was really interesting to kind of have in the conversation with him. He is a very forward-leaning guy, embraces technology for his kids and his family, really kind of an exciting, enthusiastic guy to talk to. But his IT is really struggling with, and this is in government, a very heavily regulated sector, his IT department is really, really struggling with how they can possibly keep up with his demands. And so we believe that the way we can help IT move forward into this world of device diversity is by providing intelligent application infrastructure. Infrastructure does not exist for its own purpose. It exists to provide applications to end users to get their work done. And we're going to talk to you about how we're embracing different types of application deployment types to get them to all the devices that end users want to be able to use. It's about maintaining security and access. And as the devices begin to proliferate, as more and more devices connect to the corporate network, and the corporate network becomes more porous, as consumers bring in their own services for sharing files and information, it becomes important that we move away from traditional perimeter-based approaches to securing the facility and securing the firewall to actually moving to securing the data. And so we're going to show you a little bit about how we're providing technologies in Windows Server 2012 that will automatically classify and protect data sitting on file servers. And then finally, it's about control and governance across all devices. And I'm going to spend a minute. First of all, I'm going to give you a quick glimpse of, from an end-user perspective, what we're trying to enable here. And I'm going to invite David and Josh up on stage to give you a quick sneak peek there.
All right, thanks, Garth. All right, let me go ahead and switch over to my Wolf Vision cam here. All right, well, I am an administrator at the Florida Contoso branch, and I'm out on the road in a hotel, and I need to get some work done. So let me go ahead and log in, and you'll notice that on the left-hand side, I'm using my domain credentials, fdomain.
Mic check.
There we go.
Hello. Oh.
Thank you. Well, let me start over again here. All right. Well, I'm on my Slate device, and I'm going to connect up to Outlook Web Access. One of the things that's nice is when you enable ADFS, you can actually get a single sign-on experience to your Office 365 portal. And I actually don't have my enterprise application installed here for the expense reports. When I look at this, I actually can see that my expense reports need to be approved today on June 11th. But I don't have my expense reports there. So I'm going to click on that link. That's going to take me to the application catalog. So when we go here, I'm going to click on my expenses and do the install for this. One of the things that you'll notice is that I'm actually connected over direct access. So when you look at the top left, you can see that this is an actual internal domain name. And I'm doing that because I'm connected over direct access. Also, the other thing that's nice to know is that I actually have BitLocker, so this device is fully encrypted. So it looks like it's downloading and installing the software now. Now, one of the things to keep in mind is that I can still install applications from the Windows Marketplace. It's just really convenient to me to actually have the application installed for an enterprise self-service portal to install my enterprise applications. So what I'm going to do is, looks like the expense is installed. I'm going to click OK. And then I'm going to go to my Start menu and check out and see if I have that expense approval app. So you look there, I've got the Expense Manager application, which happens to be right below Fruit Ninja. And I'm going to click on that. And you'll notice here that I have a number of expenses that need to be approved today. But one of the things that I don't actually see is my employee, Josh. I don't see that he's actually submitted any of his expenses to be approved by me. So I also know that I need to look and check and reconcile these expenses against my spreadsheet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my Outlook Office 365 site again and click on to find that Project Cosmo expenses. Now, first off, I know that I actually visit this SharePoint site a lot, so I'm going to go ahead and add it to my favorites. OK, we've added that to my favorites. The other thing I want to do before I open up the spreadsheet is I actually want to save a copy of this, because I know that I'm going to go on the plane later, and I'm actually going to do some changes on this document. So I'm going to go ahead and download a copy of this. And I'm going to save this to my My Documents so I can work on it later. OK. So now I actually want to go ahead and open up the Project Cosmo expenses document. And one of the things that I really like about the Office web applications is the fact that I can actually go into the web and let me refresh the site here. The nice thing about Office web applications is the fact that I can click on the site and open up the applications in the web browser. Hold on a minute here. View in browser. There we go. OK. Now that this is actually opened up, give it a second here. One of the nice things is the fact that because it's a web browser, Office web applications actually supports multiple browsers. So if you have Safari, if you have Chrome, all these documents will actually open up in full fidelity on the website. Okay, that's loading. All right, let me try it again here. And I know that Josh looks like he's here and he's online. So I'm going to actually go ahead and initiate a call over to Josh. So let me go ahead and click on Josh, because I know he needs to approve his expense reports. And I'm going to give him a So I'm going to go ahead and switch over to Josh, and so you can actually check out the experience and what that looks like from Josh.
Good morning, David. What can I do for you?
Hey, well, right now you're probably seeing my wolf cam, and it's kind of dark in here. Where are actually you at?
You know what? I'm actually getting ready to get on a train, but I figured I'd open up my Mac real fast and get a couple things done on the Project Cosmo stuff.
Okay. Let me get you up here on the screen so everybody can actually see you. So here we go. Okay. Where are you at, Josh?
I'm waiting for my train. My train's actually about to leave, but I figured I'd get some work done, and then I saw this call come from you. So I figured we'd chat real fast and, you know, see what I can get done for you before I get in the train.
Okay. Well, I noticed that you were actually on the Office web application and doing editing of that document.
I am. I was
on the Project Cosmo document. This is not coming up. Okay. Well, Josh really is on a Mac. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have Josh, can you actually go ahead and get those expense reports approved for me? Because I really need to get those done by today. I noticed that you hadn't actually submitted those when I went to the portal.
That's my pleasure. I'm actually, like I said, I'm just about to get in a train. But what I can do, I can go ahead and shut down here, and I can actually get my expenses done from my iPhone application for expenses.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that.
All right, I'll tell you what. Thanks again, David. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks.
All right, so here I am on the train. So first things first, you know, David asked me if I could go ahead and get my expense reports in. So I want to go ahead and do that and keep my boss happy. But like I mentioned, I'm just getting ready to get in a train. So I've gone ahead and I've shut down my laptop because it's too hard to stand in line and find a seat and everything else while I'm lugging around a Mac. So instead, what I'm going to do is do this from my phone. So luckily, my corporation has made available to me an expense application that runs on lots of different platforms, including the Windows platform, but also my iOS device. So to show you a little bit of what that looks like, I'm actually going to browse to my enterprise application store. This is delivered through a web browser, and it's going to ask me to go ahead and log in. Type my password. Let this think for a second. And once we log in, once I correctly type my password, I trust all you guys, right? All right. This is a friendship here, okay? So now that I've logged in, I actually see that my company, Contoso, is made available to me in Enterprise Application Store. The really, really cool thing about this is for applications like my expense reporting, rather than having to go out to the Apple App Store where there's all sorts of stuff, I have a well-defined, you know, carefully selected list of applications that my IT department has built and made available for my use so I can get my job done. So we're going to go ahead and click on the Get Apps link, which is going to show me my application catalog. I see there's a couple applications available to me, and what we're here to do this morning is actually expense reports, because like David mentioned, I'm really late getting them in. So we're going to click on the expense approvals application. It's going to show me some details of the application, and it's going to prompt me to install it. Once I click on install, it's actually going to ask me, are you sure you want to do this? The great part about this is my own personal device. I'm using it to get my job done, but I also use it in my personal life. So I've got the control over what applications actually get added. But I know that I want my expense reports app, so I'm going to go ahead and say install. Drops back to the home page, and you'll see that the application starts to load. And once this finishes loading, we're going to have the expense report application all set. I can get in there. I can go ahead and create my expense reports. And most importantly, keep David happy and keep him from making another call to me on the train. So this is what we really wanted to quickly show you. We wanted to show you how we can load applications through an enterprise application store, regardless of the platform, on a Windows platform, on an iOS platform. We also wanted to show you cross-collaboration. You know, a couple of technical glitches, but the idea is that we're looking at a spreadsheet that's stored in Office 365 and able to edit that in real time, regardless of the platform. David on a Windows device and myself, I promise, on a Mac. And then finally, we're able to work with Link to actually have that real-time collaboration delivered through the cloud. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Next, we're going to bring up Garth, and he's going to tell you a little bit about how this stuff actually happens. Thanks.
That we've thought about how our management tools are going to evolve in the future, we thought a lot about both control and governance. Control is the scenario where we have spent the majority of our energy over the better part of the last two decades. This was ultimately about providing IT the tools they needed to manage the entire PC lifecycle. So a PC would show up, you would apply an image on it, you would apply the set of applications that you wanted, and then you can control the policy that got applied to that device and every along the entire life cycle of that device until it was finally retired. Control meant group policy. It meant that IT could put restrictions on every single element in the registry. We had desired configuration manager as one of the most requested features, or desired configuration management, so that if an end user had the temerity to put a setting or an application on the device that the IT didn't want, we could remediate that automatically. We could fix it and revert the device back to the state. But in this world, it was all about having a corporate-controlled device. In that world also, the software that we created was free to do on Windows anything that we wanted to from an agent perspective. We could run in privileged mode. We could run as an administrator on the device, and our agents basically could have full control over that entire device, the settings, the applications, et cetera. We believe this new world is an expansion of capabilities. It's not necessarily a shift, but it's going to be one where we need to embrace the user-controlled devices, and we need to embrace new application models where the agent doesn't necessarily have administrative privileges running on the device itself. And so, for example, what Josh showed was that the user actually had control from a pull perspective on what apps got installed on his iPhone. He was presented with an app store, so IT had a curated experience and said, these are the apps we think that you need to get your job done in your particular role. But ultimately, it was Josh's decision on whether he wanted to pull down and install that. Where in the world of Configuration Manager, we've embraced more of a push model. So IT will push applications and settings down to the device rather than let the end user pull them. Likewise, we think that there's a lot that we need to think about in terms of the data. In a corporate-controlled device, if you choose to wipe that device, you can do so in a very crude manner. You can wipe the entire device, including, you know, pictures of, you know, Josh's kid's birthday or, you know, video of his wife or whatever. But that the corporate-controlled device, the IT, ultimately controls all the data and settings. In a user-controlled device on Josh's iPhone, a lot of that data belongs to Josh. IT actually doesn't necessarily want to know what Josh does with his device on his own personal time. But in the same sense, because that device is connecting to the network, we do need to be able to at least be aware of it. We need to be able to inventory it, and we have to know what corporate resources that device is accessing. And the agent in this case, as you get to know the iOS platform, Android, and increasingly on Windows 8, the application model brings a totally new security model with it. Each application runs in a very tight sandbox, and it can't necessarily have administrative control over, it can't see all the other devices on the application, et cetera. That new security model, we believe, brings a lot of benefits in terms of the durability and the security of that machine, but it also has restrictions in terms of what that agent is able to do on the device. Moving forward, we believe that users are going to be in a mix of having to have both a control-based approach as well as a governance-based approach in order to embrace all the devices that their end users want to use to get their work done. And that's the big shift that we are working on reimagining as we think about the next generation of our management tools. Now, the only way we've thought about making this work, the system has to be able to understand access and identity. Identity is a very fundamental principle in the way we think about management tools moving forward. We've had a really good a store of identity Active Directory as the authoritative store for both device and user principles in the security model. That's been there, and we are working on how we imagine that world so that we can take identity and continue to project it out onto devices that are not domain joined in the classical sense. What David showed you was a Windows 8 consumer slate running against Active Directory. He was using his own Active Directory credentials to get access to Office 365. Likewise, Josh was showing you an Apple device, not a domain-joined device in the classical sense, but using Active Directory credentials as the first proof of authentication to get onto that device. And so imagining how the directory will evolve to embrace a new set of devices and a new set of cloud-based scenarios, that's a really core thrust of what we call Windows Azure Active Directory. And we'll be showing you a little bit of that later on in the talk. User and device management. For us, historically, for the better part of two decades, we've been all about managing the device. The memory, the spindles, the settings on a device, that's kind of how we grew up. That's how SMS started. Windows was very device-centric. And we started talking 3 or 4 years ago about this idea of moving more towards managing the user. And so what Josh showed you was an example where IT had provided a set of applications in that enterprise app store, as he called it. Those were very specific to Josh. So as he signed in, the settings in the applications, the policy that's presented to him, is much more tied to Josh rather than the device that Josh happens to be working on. This is going to cause us to reimagine how all of our tools work, from going from managing an individual device in the applications to being more user-centric in the way that we think about provisioning applications and delivering policy. That's been a big thrust of the System Center 2012 release. And then finally, in terms of data protection, you know, as David showed you, hey, I'm going to take this spreadsheet from my Office 365 device, I'm going to stick it on my local hard drive so that I can have it offline to work on, you know, that can introduce a lot of very terrifying scenarios for IT. Taking that device offline, away from the nurturing, safe environment of the corporate network, and putting it onto, you know, who knows what consumer services David's using, et cetera, that can be terrifying in the case of high business impact data. And so increasingly, we're moving to put the security model around the data itself, whether that's a document or in the data itself. The security model, the rights management is actually moving into that layer. And the way, and this again is a pretty active directory-centric view of the world, for the better part of 10 decades, or sorry, the better part of 10 years, Active Directory has been that authoritative store for users, policy, and security groups. And we want to continue to make that the hub of how you think about identity across cloud and on-premise. And the thing that you want to keep in mind when we talk about Windows Azure Active Directory is this is your directory. You know, Active Directory is your directory, and we want to give you the ability to project that directory and those security models to a class of new devices. And we also want you to be able to project that to the cloud, enabling new scenarios in terms of mashups of how IT is delivered. But projecting that directory to the cloud, you retain the ultimate control over that directory. Who's in that directory? What are the security groups? You know, can you revoke that person's credentials when you need to? It remains your directory. And even when it's running in Windows Azure Active Directory, it's still your directory. And so we're not mining that and serving up ads on that data, et cetera. That is your directory, simply hosted in a service that we run. Now, central to this in Active Directory is having a sense of the user, but also knowing the applications that IT has said, hey, this is what the user needs to get their job done. Using an intelligent infrastructure here is pretty key. And in System Center 2012, I'm going to bring AJ up to show you some of the new infrastructure that we created so that on the back end, we can actually know who the user is, what device they're using, and the best way to deliver that device, whether it's a virtualized version of that device, whether it's device optimized, or whether it's simply a web application that we're going to deliver via HTML5. Having an intelligent infrastructure that knows how to dynamically compose that information on the fly is really the key to being user-centric. And so I'm going to bring up AJ to actually show us a sneak peek of this version of System Center 2012.
Thanks, Garth. And my mic is working. That's good. But I'm not able to show you anything. Yes. So I need some technical help. Getting me with help. But while there, oh, there you go. Woohoo! Oh.
Sorry.
All right, thank you. Can you stay here? So,
yep.
All right. I really need help. Okay, so in this demo, I really want to highlight two different things. One is the diversity of applications and devices that my users have and how we manage them. And two is the integration of identity and how it enables us to provide people-centric management. Just now you saw David use his new Windows 8 tablet and deploy applications, Metro-style applications, on that new Windows 8 tablet. Let me show you as an IT administrator how we enable it on the back end. So we are using Configuration Manager 2012 to deploy, manage my users, my devices, as well as my applications. So here you see the admin console of Configuration Manager 2012. And this is the same expense that David had deployed on his Windows 8 tablet. If you look at the deployment type below, have a new deployment type for Windows Metro style apps. This is an upcoming Service Pack 1 feature, which will be released this week. Service Pack 1 CTP will be available to you this week for Configuration Manager 2012. And this is part of that new functionality that we are we are releasing a new app, new deployment type that you can define for Windows Metro Rail apps. Let's look at those properties and see, you know, how we enable those Metro style apps. First, on the content side, if you look at this content location, this is actually using my existing infrastructure to deploy Windows Metro style apps. That means you can use configuration to deploy Windows Metro style line of business applications. You do not have to use Windows Store for your corporate or enterprise applications. So easier on users to deploy the apps. So Configuration Manager has these requirement rules. Garth talked about user-centric delivery. So what we can do is define different requirement rules. One of those automatically defined here is that Configuration Manager will dynamically check for prerequisites. In this case, it's checking if the device is a Windows 8 device or not. If it's not, it will not even deploy it. So it's making it easier for the user. Another thing that we are introducing in Service Pack 1 is creating deployment types or deploying apps even for Mac OS. So I can create another deployment type. And as you can see, it could be a Windows installer, so native installer. You have Windows 7 machines there, devices there, and if you wanted to deploy those locally, you could virtualized application, you could do that as well through Configuration Manager. And now with Service Pack 1, you could also deploy applications to Mac OS. So Configuration Manager will dynamically give the best experience for the user. The user can use Windows 8 device, Windows 7, Mac OS. Configuration Manager will understand the user based on the deployment that I have done here. So with Active Directory integration, I am able to define and deploy these applications to users in managers group or sales group that is taken from my local Active Directory groups. And once I do that, Configuration Manager will dynamically provide the best application based on the platform that the user is using. So that was about defining applications, deploying applications using Configuration Manager. Also saw Josh using an iPhone to get the same app. So as you know, mobile devices are always connected to the internet. So it's a natural fit to manage these mobile devices through an internet-connected service. For those who don't know, Windows Intune is our in-the-cloud management service. And so let me show you how to enable those mobile device management scenarios through Windows Intune. So I'm going to go here and log into Windows Intune. Me to log in for a second. Okay. It's timed out, I know. That's why I'm trying to log back in. Okay, there you go. So while it is logging back in, is in the service that is able to give you ability to manage mobile devices, manage your desktop as well. And here is the console, browser-based console of Windows Intune. The first thing I want to show you is the integration of common identity. So let me go to users. As you can see, I'm able to have inventory of my users in the domain. This is my local Active Directory domain that I'm able to pull in the cloud with Windows Intune. And this is done through integration of Windows Azure Active Directory services. So through Windows Azure Active Directory services, I'm able to pull all the users from my local Active Directory domain. So we have a common understanding of users on-premise as well as in the cloud. Thing I want to show you is the inventory of mobile devices. So with Exchange Active Sync integration, Windows Intune is able to pull inventory of all the mobile devices that you have in your enterprise. And as you can see here, I have Josh's iPhone listed, and now I can manage that iPhone as well as deploy software to that iPhone. So let's deploy, let's look at deployment of that software. Let's go to manage software. And as you will see here, there are multiple types of applications that I have defined. So the same expense app that I had deployed from Configuration Manager, you'll see that same one is here that is being deployed for iOS device. And I could also have other applications for Android devices as well. Deploying that app is also very easy. Garth talked about common identity, having the ability to define these applications to users from your on-premise Active Directory. I'm doing the same thing. I'm using Managers group to deploy this app to. Let's do next, and this is really powerful. So remember, these phones or these mobile devices are personally owned. I do not, as an IT administrator, I do not want to force any application on those devices. And so what I will do here is I'll make it available. This application will now be available in the software service portal from Windows Intune. That was the same portal that Josh used to deploy this application. I'm just making it easy for him to find it in my portal. So they don't have to go to a third party, Apple App Store, for example, to get your line of business applications. That's done. I have deployed an application to managers, but I do want to make sure that they are secure, the devices are secure, and I have policy and governance defined. So the way I do it is, again, through Exchange Active Sync, I'm able to define security policies on these mobile devices. So I've already defined a mobile device policy here. I'm just going to share some settings that I can do through Windows Intune. Again, remember, it's using Exchange Active Sync to provide these enforcement policies. So for example, I can enforce a password or a security PIN on that mobile device. I can also enforce encryption on that mobile device. And I can do certain security settings about email download capabilities, as well as other devices' capabilities being used on that phone, for example. I can turn off the camera on that phone. So all these security policies also now can be defined for mobile devices using Windows Intune. So you just saw multiple devices, diverse set of devices, diverse set of applications being managed by Configuration Manager 2012, as well as Windows Intune. Make sure that the information on these devices is protected. So we need to go deeper into information protection. I'm going to invite Josh back in to show you how we enable information protection across these scenarios. Josh?
AJ. So like AJ was mentioning, protecting the information that lives on these devices is as critical as protecting the devices themselves. When Garth was speaking just a little while ago, he talked about what David showed in the beginning of the demo, where he had an app where he had a particular document stored in Office 365 and then downloaded that document onto his personal laptop. What we didn't show you is that that his personal My Documents was actually redirected to a Windows Server 2012 file server. So we want to just show you a couple of the quick features we've added, a couple of the quick capabilities we've added to Windows Server 2012 to make it easier for you guys to manage information protection for your organization. So to do that, we're going to look at a tool called the File Server Resource Manager. The File Server Resource Manager is the tool that we use on our file servers to help manage and secure them and apply policy. Within the File Server Resource Manager, we've implemented a technology called Dynamic Access Control. Dynamic Access Control, it's a fairly big technology, but what we're going to show you today is specifically some capabilities it has around discovering and classifying the data that lives on your organizational file servers, and then some integration it's got with technologies like Active Directory Rights Management Services to protect that data. So to that end, within FSRM, we're going to look within Classification Management. Classifying your data is all about applying a taxonomy to the type of data on your organizational file servers. Applying the classification is actually a really, really challenging thing because you have to know, as IT administrators, what the type of information is that lives out on those servers. That's a really, really hard thing to do. At the same time, asking users to do it themselves is also really challenging because users want to get their job done, not classify their data. So what we've built into Windows Server 2012 are some enhanced capabilities around classifying that data. So we've built these classification rules, and let's take a quick look. This is a classification rule that I've built for special projects. I give it a name, and I give it a scope. I tell it where on the file server should I look for the data to classify. Then I can go over to the classification tab and actually set the action. I've got a couple of different ways I can classify data. I can classify it, you know, based on where it is in folders, so location. I can classify it through PowerShell scripting. What we're going to look at today, though, is how we can classify that data based on its contents. In other words, let's look within the document itself and, based on criteria, decide what kind of classification it should have. Once we decide that, we need to decide what to do with it. So we can set properties, and these classification properties are bound to the files themselves. If you look, I've got a single classification property. The cool part is that classification property comes from Active Directory. You set this up once in AD and push it out to all of your file servers. That way you don't have to manage this stuff on every individual file server, you manage it once. Then we can set a value. The values for those properties are also stored in Active Directory. But I mentioned criteria. We have to decide, how do we decide if we're going to set impact values to high? Well, we can do that a few different ways. What we've done is actually set up a string and with an expression attached to it. Project Cosmo. If you remember from the beginning, we were dealing with the Project Cosmo documentation. So I was looking at an expense spreadsheet. That Project Cosmo is a highly sensitive project that Contoso Corp is working on. And any time we see expressions like that in data, we know that that's really, really critical corporate confidential data. So we want to make sure that we apply its classification property appropriately. We've got some additional capabilities here. We can also identify contents based on regular expressions for more flexibility. Now, once we've actually done the classification, we're not quite done. Once we've classified the files, what do we want to do with it? And what we're going to show you today is how we can actually automatically encrypt and apply policy to that data based on its classification. So to do that, I've created what we call a file management task. These file management tasks are built, again, within File Server Resource Manager. We give it a scope, but then we also look at a condition. And we're basically looking for any piece of data within that scope whose impact property is set to high. If that impact property is set to high, we can go ahead and take an action on it. The action we're looking at today is we're going to automatically apply RMS protection to any document whose condition matches impact value equals high. We're leveraging the existing Active Directory RMS implementation that Contoso Corp has. You can see that I've actually picked the template. So any data that's related to Project Cosmo, I've created a specific policy that governs who can access it and what level of control do they have over it. So I assume many of you in here have probably used ADRMS before. Here we're making it easier because now we don't have to rely on the end users to decide, when do I need to apply policy? Is this information too critical? Because you, in conjunction with your corporate policy partners, can decide what information needs to be protected. So to sum up, we're going to look at how this actually works in the next demo. But to sum up, what we've looked at is, how do we discover the data in our file servers and classify it using a Windows Server 2012 dynamic access control? And then we said, once we classify it, how do we then automatically protect that data so that it's safe from accidental distribution? So with that, we're going to bring Garth back up and keep going. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh.
So the last set of demos we're going to look at have to do with desktop virtualization. And Microsoft has been embracing desktop virtualization for some years now, and I thought it would be good to just recap some of the technologies we have and where we see the use cases. In the case of a new component called UEV and AppV, we see these as very broadly used by customers. Generally, customers have application compatibility issues, or they want file roaming, so settings can roam with the user. UEV is user experience virtualization. These we see as broadly deployed, and feedback from customers is that they have use case across the great majority of their PC installed base. We also have virtual desktops and applications and local virtualization, which have more limited use cases. In the case of VDI, Microsoft has had Terminal Server in the market, now called Remote Desktop Services. That's a very mature technology. It's been deployed broadly for the better part of more than a decade. And these are very stable technologies, and customers use them most commonly for the scenarios I have up here. One is just very flexible access to Windows, or in the case of bring your own devices, they may want to actually remote the application or the entire desktop from the data center where they retain control, and then you can use a simple RDP client to project that experience down to an endpoint. We also see customers that use this in highly regulated environments as a way of actually locking up and controlling secure data. A large travel company in Seattle uses it. They basically maintain all of their core source code for their application in a set of servers that live in Seattle, and they have offshore development teams in India and other countries that do all of their development there. But in that use case, they're using session-based virtualization to provide that development environment offshore, but they never have their code, their core IP, leave their data center in Seattle. And there's also some benefits in terms of centralized management. In the case of pooled VDI in particular, there's some great enhancements that we have that allow you to manage all of your desktop images and settings in a single space. And then with Windows 8, we're also introducing client-side Hyper-V. This has been a big request of customers for a number of years. We've had virtual PC for a while. Now you see in Windows 8 Hyper-V on the desktop. In most cases, this is primarily used for dev and test. Hyper-V is the same Hyper-V that comes in Windows Server 2012. So Hyper-V 3, and it's got all the bells and whistles that IT professionals love. Not something that I think my mother or my grandmother would use as an end user of Windows, for example. But for IT, this has been a very commonly requested feature, and we're happy to deliver it in Windows 8. And to give you a sneak peek at what we're doing with desktop virtualization, I'm going to bring Adam Carter up on stage.
Audio happening. Hey, you guys can hear me? All right. And let me get my machine. I know. I'm switching. Okay, so far this morning you've seen how Contoso has made applications available to users on non-Windows devices. We showed off a little bit of how you can still collaborate on documents using other platforms. But sometimes the Windows desktop is the right solution for your users. Maybe you've got legacy applications that you want to port or don't have the ability to port. Maybe you've got sensitive data that you want to keep control of and keep in the data center. And remote desktop services and VDI is a great way to do that. So here at Contoso, that's what I've been asked to do, is deliver virtual desktops to our users. And fortunately, Windows Server 2012 makes this very easy to do. If you've tried doing VDI on Windows Server in the past, there was a lot of documentation to take you through the process, but there were many, many steps and many things that all had to be configured manually. We've got a great way in Server 2012 to automate that process that I want to show you. So this is a new machine, a new server that I'm going to go ahead and enable for VDI. And I've just launched, here from the new server manager, the add roles and features tool. I've got the traditional version that you're used to from Server 2008, which is role and feature-based installation. That gives me that long checklist of things, and I pick the boxes that I want. But I've got this new option here for remote desktop services installation. That's what I want to show you today. So it's going to give me a couple of options, a standard deployment that lets me move the services and select which machines they go on, or Quick Start, which is a great way for you to get a pilot or a proof of concept up and running. It's going to automatically install all of the services and configure them for me on one machine. It's giving me the choice, do I want to do this with virtual desktops, or do I want to do session-based or terminal server type of a deployment. Let's do VDI, because that's usually the trickier one. Ask me which machine that I want to use for this. And right now it's going to do an inspection on that machine and figure out what it actually needs to configure there. Is Hyper-V already installed? Is Internet Information Server already installed? Does the machine need to have any patches or anything applied before it can finish the wizard? And then from here, I'm not going to reboot this one now, it asked me one other question, which is, where's the virtual desktop that you want me to apply? And I've already got one created, which is a sysprepped virtual machine that I would show it. And from there, it's hands off for me. The wizard takes care of installing all the roles, rebooting the server, finishes that. Because let me show you what I baked earlier today, since that one, we don't want to wait for the reboot to happen there. So here's another server that I previously configured. You can see I've got another option, a new option down here for remote desktop services. When I go in there, it shows me this nice diagram showing me that everything's configured. All the services are on one machine. My quick VM pool that was created as part of that wizard is here. I've also done some other things. I went ahead and turned on remote desktop sessions earlier, and instead of publishing the whole desktop, published a couple of applications. So it looks like this is all pretty much there. Let me just take a look and see what it looks like. I'm going to access the web console that users have the option of using to access these desktops and applications. Okay, so it looks like from this console. Now notice, I did this from Internet Explorer. One of the other changes that we made in Windows Server 2012 remote desktop web access is it's no longer ActiveX control dependent. So I actually could have done this from Chrome or any other browser, gotten this same list and been able to launch things from here. It looks like it's working for me, but really the test is going to be what do my end users think. So what I want to do is invite David up here as a user and have him take a look at this experience and see if it's going to work for him to do his job.
Check mic, check mic, check, check, check the mic.
So are they checking out?
I'm checking it out, waiting for my mic to start up again.
Okay.
All right.
So David, I showed everybody the web access console, which is, you know, you've got to remember that URL, try to get users to remember that long URL is sometimes difficult. But with Windows 8, we've got a great Metro application that makes this very easy to do and makes it much easier for you to subscribe. So let me have you do that, David. Go to the Start menu. I guess I can do all the talking for you if you were to get your mic.
Yeah.
I can talk for both of us.
To hear me, that would be awesome.
Go ahead and bring up your Start menu.
Okay, let's do that.
And launch the new remote desktop application that's there.
Okay.
So we've got that option there to connect to my work resources. Now this is where in the past you would have had to remember that long URL or I would have given you that. We can subscribe just by email now. So just put your email address in there. And then of course you'll get, it'll find the feed and then prompt you for your corporate credentials to make sure you are who you say you are.
Hello, hello, hello? Yeah. Hey, woohoo! All right, here we go. All right, so of course, you know, I need to put in my domain credentials because this is my personal laptop. So I'm going to click OK. And it's going to look, oh, and it looks like it found a few applications for me. Now, I'm just trying this out. I'm not so sure how it's going to work out, so.
Well, let's just give it a chance. Don't knock until you've had a chance, David.
All
keep
right,
going. Go ahead
right.
And.
So I see here that it's got a few resources here. Now, do I have to go into this remote desktop app every single time to open up all this?
Well, that's kind of the thing. Go ahead and go back to your Start menu, David.
Okay.
And if you scroll over, you see we've integrated with the Start menu. You've got some work resources there that shows that desktop that I published to you as well as some of those applications that I published.
Yep.
So you can access them directly from here.
Oh, okay. So those ones that say work resources, those are the ones that you publish. And
yeah, that's right.
Those? Okay, cool. Well, what I really want to do, though, is actually access the full remote desktop. I want to see
okay.
what that's like. So
yep.
Why don't I click on my personal VM that looks like you've set up for me.
I've got that assigned. And take it just a minute here
to
log in for the
up.
First time.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that I added as part of our corporate desktop when that I provided that image in addition to some of our corporate apps like Office, was UEV, User Experience Virtualization, which roams all of your desktop settings and applications. So that way, we've got that same wallpaper that you had on your tablet earlier, we're able to roam right into the session.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, is it just wallpaper, though? I mean,
Your wallpaper.
What else?
Your applications, too. I think I remember you bookmarked some of the work pages that you work with earlier in Internet Explorer,
yeah.
Right?
So I see when earlier I saved that team site on my Slate device, it looks like it saved also that shortcut I had in Internet Explorer.
Cool.
But what about my documents?
Yep.
What about that? Do I still have all those there on this VM?
Take a look and see. Remember Josh mentioned earlier, we've set up folder redirection.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Well, I'm going to go ahead and just see if some of those changes that I had on my Slate are actually saved on this Project Cosmo expenses. So I'm going to open
that's
that.
That's right. You downloaded the expense spreadsheet earlier, so you'd have a copy while you were traveling.
Okay. What is that? I didn't set any permissions on my
yeah,
document.
You didn't set any permissions, David, because you're a user and you're not thinking about security, but as the IT guy.
Oh, come on now.
So if you remember, Josh went through that process of saying any documents that have the word Project Cosmo in them, we want to automatically apply some rights management to. And you can see that because that document sits on a server with file redirection, we were able to do that automatically. You didn't have to think about the security, but I still have integrity of my data.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's pretty cool. And it looks like you've got different permissions already set here on the dock. Okay. Well, this is all great, but what about performance of this thing? I mean, what is this thing going to perform pretty well for me?
You know, we definitely want to improve the good performance. experience. And while I wouldn't normally condone playing games on a corporate device or with corporate resources, games are a great way for us to show off how responsive this new remote desktop VDI solution is. So I noticed you were playing Cut the Rope earlier. You had it installed on your tablet. Go ahead and just launch the browser version here. We didn't install it in the corporate image.
Sure, that sounds like fun.
And this gives us an opportunity to show off a few things. Some smooth animation there, audio. This is all happening on a server.
Okay.
We're also all touch-enabled, and Cut the Rope happens to be a touch-enabled game, so you can actually play using touch.
Okay. Cardboard box, sure, I'll play this. I'll do the first one here. I don't know.
Timing is everything in this game. It's so important that we have good responsiveness.
That one must have been easy just to get me going. I don't know if that's how good that one is. Looks like this is actually not a bad experience here. Ooh.
You better keep practicing that.
I better quit.
Anyway, it looks like the responsiveness is pretty good. Looks like that was usable for you.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Okay, one of the other things that I really like to do is I have USB sticks. I've got scanners and printers and USB devices that I plug into my personal device. What can you do for me there?
That's one of the other things that we've enabled with Server 2012 and VDI is the ability to remote effectively any USB device that I, as the administrator, enable by policy. So I can control that to maintain my data integrity. But for you, we've got it all enabled. Plug in any USB device you want, and we can redirect and make that available to you in your session.
Okay, well, if you say any device, I do have a scanner here, a barcode scanner that I picked up that I happen to have lying around. I will go ahead and plug this in and see what happens.
So a barcode scanner, okay. Again, this could have been any USB device, if that's the one you want to use.
Okay, sure, yeah, let's see. Okay, we hear the beeps here. Looks like I noticed there's a couple barcodes here, so what the heck, why don't I go ahead and scan these after I open up this document and see if that scans into this session here.
So we plugged the device in locally. Now we're going to see that's the session.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's clever, I guess. A barcode there for that. We got one more here, it looks like. Let's see here. Let's try this one out. Windows Server 2012.
Yeah.
Who set those up?
I have no idea where those barcodes came from, but that was great. So like you've got a desktop that was very responsive, that was compatible with your applications. What do you think? Is this something you can use?
Yeah, I think this could be a good way on my own personal devices for me to get some work done. I like how it's roamed all my settings, all my documents are there. It's really just like almost like my Slate device that I had that's running Windows natively. Yeah.
And for me as the IT administrator, I found it very easy to set up and put the policies in place to control access to data and make sure the data had integrity. So it sounds like it's a win for both of us.
Yeah,
all right.
Cool, man.
Let's bring Garth back up here to wrap up.
So we bring the lights up? No, just kidding. We've had a lot of gremlins today, day one of tech ed. Kind of goes with the territory. So in short, we believe that the best way that IT is going to be successful in enabling these trends of consumerization is around putting the user at the center, making sure that you're putting the user at the center, taking that core infrastructure that you've got in Active Directory, projecting it to a class of new diverse devices, and also projecting it into a lot of new cloud scenarios. One thing that I would encourage you to take a look at is Windows Azure Active Directory. We have a few sessions coming up later this week, but this is really the key enabling technology that sits underneath Office 365, that sits underneath Windows Intune, and over time will sit underneath a whole host of third-party ISV applications. And I have a couple of those sessions before. We had a demo, but in the interest of time, we're going to cut it and just send you straight to the sessions to learn more about Azure Active Directory. Embracing consumerization of IT, I think I'm going to be here next year and the year after talking about this. This is a trend that's going to be with us for a long time. You don't want to bet against your end users. Give them the devices, let them use the devices they want to use to get their work done, and then make sure that you can get your job done, keeping that corporate information secure and well-governed. So thank you and have a great Tech Ed.